Krishna Book, Canto 20, Prayers by the Personified Vedas, Chapter 87, Scene 1, King Parikshit's Very Important Question. Sri Parikshit Uvacha, Brahman Brahmani Anirdeshe, Nirgune Gunavrittayah, Kathang Charanti Srutayah, Sakshat Sad Asata Pare. King Parikshit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami about a very important topic in understanding transcendental subject matter. His question was, since Vedic knowledge generally deals with the subject matter of the three qualities of the material world, then how can it approach the subject matter of transcendence, which is beyond the approach of the three material modes? Since the mind is material, and the vibration of words is a material sound, how can the Vedic knowledge, which is expressed by material sound through the thoughts of the mind, approach transcendence? Description of a subject matter necessitates describing its source of emanation, its qualities, and its activities. Such description can be possible only by thinking with the material mind and by vibrating material words. Although Brahman, or the Absolute Truth, has no material qualities, our power of speaking does not go beyond the material qualities. So how then can Brahman, the Absolute Truth, be described by your words? I do not see how it is possible to understand transcendence from such expressions of material sound. The purpose of King Parikshit's inquiring was to ascertain from Shukadeva Goswami whether the Vedas ultimately describe the Absolute Truth as impersonal or as personal. Understanding of the Absolute Truth progresses in three features: impersonal Brahman, Paramatma localized in everyone's heart, and at last, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The Vedas deal with three departments of activities. One is called Karmakanda, or activities under Vedic injunction, which gradually purify one to understand his or her real position. Next is Jnanakanda, the process of understanding the Absolute Truth by speculative methods. And the third is Upasana Kanda, or worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and sometimes of the demigods also. Worship of demigods recommended in the Vedas is ordered with the understanding of the demigods' relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has many parts and parcels. Some are called swangshas, or his personal expansions, and some are called vibhina angshas, or the living entities. All such expansions, both swangsha and vibhinangsha, are emanations from the original personality of Godhead. Swangsha expansions are called Vishnu Tattva, whereas the Vibhinangsha expansions are called Jiva Tattva. The different demigods are Jiva Tattva. The conditioned souls are generally put into the activities of the material world for sense gratification. Therefore, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, to regulate those who are very much addicted to different kinds of sense gratification, the worship of demigods is sometimes recommended. For example, persons who are very much addicted to meat eating, the Vedic injunction recommends that after worshipping the form of goddess Kali and sacrificing a goat, not any other animal, Under Karmakanda regulation, the worshipper may be allowed to eat meat. The idea is not to encourage one to eat meat, but to allow one who is persistent to eat meat under certain restricted conditions. Therefore, worship of the demigods is not worship of the Absolute Truth, but by worshiping the demigods, one gradually comes to accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead in an indirect way. This indirect acceptance is described in Bhagavad Gita as avidhi. Avidhi means not bona fide. Since demigod worship is not bona fide, the impersonalist stress concentration on the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. King Parikshit's question was, which is the ultimate target of Vedic knowledge? Should this concentration be on the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth, or should it be concentration on the personal feature? After all, both the impersonal and personal features of the Supreme Lord are beyond our material conception. The impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth, the Brahman effulgence, is but the rays of the personal body of Krishna. These rays of the personal body of Krishna are cast all over the creation of Lord Krishna, and the portion of the effulgence which is covered by the material cloud is called the created cosmos of the three material qualities, sattva, rajas, tamas. So how can persons who are within this clouded portion, called the material world, conceive of the Absolute Truth by the speculative method? Sri Shuka Uvacha, Budhindriya Manak Pranan Jananam Asrijat Prabhu Matratang Cha Bhavartang Cha Atmane Kalpanaya Cha. In answering King Parikshit's question, Shukadeva Goswami replied that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has created the mind, senses, and living force for the purpose of sense gratification in transmigration from one kind of body to another, as well as for the purpose of allowing liberation from material conditions. In other words, the senses, mind, and living force can be utilized either for sense gratification and transmigration from one body to another, or for the matter of liberation. The Vedic injunctions are there just to give the conditioned souls the chance for sense gratification under regulative principles, and thereby also give them the chance for promotion to the higher conditions of life. Ultimately, if consciousness is purified, then one comes to his or her original position and goes back home, back to Godhead. The living force is intelligent. One therefore has to utilize the intelligence over the mind and senses. When the mind and senses are purified by the proper use of intelligence, then the conditioned soul is liberated. Otherwise, if the intelligence is not properly utilized in controlling the senses and the mind, then the conditioned soul continues to transmigrate from one kind of body to another simply for sense gratification. Another point clearly stated in the answer of Shukadeva Goswami is that Lord Krishna created the mind, senses, and intelligence of the individual living force. It is not stated that the living entities themselves were ever created. Just as the shining particles of the sun's rays are always existing along with the sun, the living entities exist eternally as parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conditioned souls, although eternally existing as part of the Supreme Lord, are sometimes put within the cloud of the material conception of life into the darkness of ignorance. But the whole Vedic process is to alleviate that darkened condition. Ultimately, when the senses and mind of the conditioned being become fully purified, he or she then comes to the original position called Krishna consciousness, and that is liberation. In the Vedanta Sutra, the first sutra or code, questions about the absolute truth, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, what is the nature of the absolute truth? And the next sutra answers that the nature of the absolute truth is that he is the origin of everything. Whatever we experience, even in this material condition of life, is but an emanation from him. The absolute truth created the mind, senses, and intelligence. So, this must mean that the absolute truth is not without mind, intelligence, and senses. In other words, the absolute truth is not impersonal. For the very word created means that the absolute truth has transcendental intelligence. For example, when a father begets a child, the child has senses because the father also has senses. The child is born with hands and legs because the father also has hands and legs. Sometimes it is said, therefore, that man is made after the image of God. The absolute truth is therefore the Supreme Personality with transcendental mind, senses, and intelligence. And when one's mind, intelligence, and senses are purified of material contamination, one can then understand the original feature of the absolute truth as a person. The Vedic process is to gradually promote the conditioned soul, gradually from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion, and from the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, there is sufficient light for understanding things as they are. For example, from earth a tree grows, and from the wood of the tree fire is ignited. In that igniting process, we first of all find the smoke, and the next stage is heat, and then fire. When there is actually fire, we can utilize it for various purposes. Therefore, fire is the ultimate goal. Similarly, in the gross material stage of life, the quality of ignorance is very much prominent. Dissipation of this ignorance takes place in the gradual progress of civilization from the barbarian stage to civilized life. And when one comes to the form of civilized life, one is said to be in the mode of passion. In the barbarian stage, or in the mode of ignorance, the senses are gratified in a very crude way, whereas in the mode of passion, or in the civilized stage of life, the senses are gratified in a polished manner. But when one is promoted to the mode of goodness, one can understand that the senses and the mind are only engaged in material activities due to being covered by perverted consciousness. When this perverted consciousness is gradually transformed into Krishna consciousness, then the path of liberation is opened. So it is not that one is unable to approach the absolute truth by the senses and the mind. The conclusion is that the senses, mind, and intelligence in the gross stage of contamination cannot appreciate the nature of the Absolute Truth. But when purified, the senses, mind, and intelligence can understand what the Absolute Truth is. This purifying process is called devotional service or Krishna consciousness. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that the purpose of Vedic knowledge is to understand Krishna. Vedaischa sarvair aham eva vedyo. Vedanta krid vedavid eva chaham. And Krishna is understood by devotional service, beginning with the process of surrender. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Madgitain antar atmana tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudyacha ananya cheta satatang yo mam smarati nityashah mam jayanta upasate manmana bhavamad bhakto madyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishyasi satyang te pratijane priyosi me. One has to think of Krishna always. One has to render loving service to Krishna always. And one has to always worship and bow down before Krishna. By this process only can one enter into the kingdom of God without any doubt. So, when one is enlightened in the mode of goodness by the process of devotional service, he or she is freed from the modes of ignorance and passion. The word Atmane indicates the stage of brahminical qualification in which one is allowed to study the Vedic literatures known as the Upanishads. The Upanishads describe in different ways the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord. The Absolute Truth, or the Supreme Lord, is called Nirguna. But that does not mean that the Absolute Truth has no qualities. For it is only because the Absolute Truth has qualities that the conditioned living entities can also have qualities. The purpose of studying the Upanishads is to understand the transcendental qualities of the Absolute Truth, as opposed to the material qualities of ignorance, passion, and goodness. And that is the way of Vedic understanding. Great sages like the four Kumaras, headed by Sanaka, followed these principles of Vedic knowledge and came gradually from the impersonal understanding to the platform of personal worship of the Supreme Lord. It is therefore recommended that we must follow the great personalities. Shukadeva Goswami is also one of the great personalities, and his answer to the inquiry of Maharaj Parikshit is authorized. One who follows in the footsteps of such great personalities surely walks very easily on the path of liberation and ultimately goes back to home, back to Godhead. And that is the way of perfecting this human form of life. Thus ends Chapter 87, Scene 1, King Parikshit's Very Important Question. All glories to Krishna Book, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.